We're going to have a good show. It's going to be entertaining, podcasting. I'm just getting myself motivated. And now you just heard me talk about the night the air went out in Texas. To elaborate further, a man who was in the building, big time NBA writer, the real deal, host of a podcast on the Blue Wire Network. I did it and did forget the name. Don't worry about that. Howard's going to tell you soon. Full name now, Mr. Howard Beck. How you doing, Howard?
I'm doing well, Jamel. Good to see you again. Appreciate you coming over on the Crossover Podcast for Sports Illustrated. There it was. And glad to be back with you to talk about the night that we all nearly melted into a pool of mass sweat on the floor of the AT&T Center.
San Antonio, Texas, in the middle of June. The air is out for hours in the building?
Hours. And here's the thing. If you've been to San Antonio, you know that when you're outside of the building or any building, you're already melting into the asphalt because it's hot and it's humid, it's sweltering, it's gross, but there's an NBA game to be played indoors. And so you think, well, okay, I can still get dressed up like I normally would and go into this game and I'll be fine. Because that's what we do. We need to look semi-presentable as reporters. Like, well, yeah, we're not exactly, you know, fashion plates here. But sport coat, dress shirt, that's what you're expecting, Jamel. And you don't get any clue that anything's happening until about midway through the second quarter. Like, it's a very gradual thing. We were the lobsters or the frog in the slowly boiling pot that you don't realize until it's too late. Oh, yeah. No, we're all dead.
And you have on a wool jacket.
Yes. My best Men's Warehouse, George Zimmer. Those are two names you should not mix up.
Confused. Look, it's early. Don't worry about that. We're not gonna.
Guy who says I guarantee it. Not the other dude.
Yeah. Different. Absolutely.
I had on my best Men's Warehouse. I'm not kidding about the Men's Warehouse thing, by the way. That's a real thing. You kill me if you want to. But
come on. You like the way you looked in that.
I do. He guaranteed it. I believed him. So we're sitting there on press row. We're sitting there and you do feel like it's getting hotter and humid in the building. And that's a little unusual. And we're turning to each other. Like, is it just me? Like, am I getting the flu? Am I having hot flashes? Like, what's going on? I don't know. And then you realize you start looking around and like, no, everybody, people are taking off their coats. They're taking off their free Spurs shirts that were given out pregame, right? That were sitting on all the seats, all the like black t-shirts. Like they took off all that. And then you look around and there's those placards they hand out that say like, go Spurs, go, NBA Finals or whatever on them. And people are all using them as fans now. Everybody's waving these things in their faces. The entire place, 20,000 people, whatever that building holds, everyone is just sweltering, drenched. I'm sweating through. I'm sweating like an offensive tackle standing on the Herald Square subway platform in the middle of July in New York City. I'm not a big man. You see, I'm sweating like a 400 pound man, and my sport coat, I'm soaked through. It was gross. It was by far. I've covered, I think, like 2,000 NBA games in 24 years. It was by far the most uncomfortable I've been.
Ooh, just like the building is an actual oven bag. I can't get over it. Watching it on TV, you could see everybody starting to fan themselves. I can't imagine what it felt like. I'm imagining now like you're trying to write notes on a legal pad and the sweat is dripping off your nose type.
On the notebook, on the keyboard, on everything. Ooh. Of course, on top of it all, AT&T Center, infamous among us in the media for being a place that is sponsored by, named for a telecommunications company, but has the worst Wi-Fi in the NBA. So we now have the double jeopardy of the Wi-Fi won't work. I'm sweating to death. It was fairly miserable. I remember at one point late in the game, I think Doris Burke on the national broadcast actually like they somehow got her a thermometer or something, an air thermometer, so she could show like it's 90 plus degrees in here at court level. It was awful.
Let me ask you this. Who was the hottest looking person you saw there? Like, was there actually somebody like you look at, you're like, man, this is crazy. And then you turn to your left and you see a man in a purple silk suit with like a white bowler hat. His perm is all fucked up. Like, did you see anything like that?
I don't recall seeing anything like that. Guaranteed there was something like that there. Fortunately, I wasn't sitting next to anybody even larger than I, you know, like I wasn't sitting next to anybody who I thought was going to like pass out, right? From just the utter heat and uncomfortableness, whatever. There was no, you know, it never got that bad. I think the only person I was sitting next to, if I recall correctly, I was right next to my my colleague at the time, Ethan Skolnick. And I think we would just, you know, we just got to that point where it's like, what do we do? Do we take off our coat? Okay, we can take off our sport coats. We can't start stripping down to like our shorts. Like, but that's what it felt like. It felt like this is what you need to do. It was like a hot summer day where you're just, you take everything off to feel comfortable again, but we can't because we are professional reporters covering an NBA finals game in San Antonio.
Do you regret not going down to the boxer briefs? Come on, man. You would have changed. You would have, it, like, we're talking about Rushmore Hall of Fame. The night the air went out, Howard Beck is courtside in his Hanes in a beater covering the game.
Can you imagine like the press conference afterward, you know, because they put the camera on the media, which is bad enough, by the way. Like we don't need, no one needs to see us, Jamel. Can you imagine like, all right, we will now take questions for Coach Popovich. Howard Beck, what do you got? And then like they turn and like everybody out there is just like, we're just naked from the waist up. That would be a phenomenal moment in NBA Finals history. And it would have been warranted.
It's like the Spurs seem like the most like right and just NBA organization. They just learned how to do crisp chest passes. And like there's never been no beef. This is their only time that feels anything like a deflate gate. You got LeBron coming to down. It feels intentional. But there's no way it's intentional. This is just ownership and like the building being ass.
I mean, it did spawn some conspiracy theories, Jamel, because everything that happens in the NBA must spawn a conspiracy theory. It's an unwritten law of the NBA. I mean, also they're run by Greg Popovich, right? Pop, who like trained as like some international spy in the Air Force before becoming a coach. Like, we don't know what this man's capable of. I don't think he did that. I don't think the Spurs did that intentionally. I'm just saying when these kinds of things happen, and especially if it involves the Spurs and Greg Popovich, people are going to start to, you know, rub their chin a little. Also, there was a moment in, I believe, the fourth quarter after LeBron had started cramping up and all that was going on, where he had been mic'd for that game. And he said something to the effect of, they're trying to smoke us out of here. So certainly the Heat players were kind of wondering if this was some sort of plot to defeat them.
I have more Spurs thoughts, but let's get into that Heat team. If the air is on, is that enough to swing the series for them?
This is like an amazing what if for NBA history, because, you know, one game, we can say that's just one game. And literally it was game one, right? You've got the whole rest of the series to win 4 out of 6. And you're the Miami Heat. You're the back-to-back NBA champs at that point. You just won the previous two titles. You've got LeBron and Wade and Bosch, Heatles, all this stuff. You're supposed to have enough regardless. So the easy answer is you still had other chances. The AC did not malfunction, thank God, in game two or any further games. But game one sets a tone. And they were up in that game. They were up in the fourth quarter. They were up, I believe, when LeBron went down. And he goes out of the game with the cramps. He tries to come back in, can't do it, has to leave again. And, you know, look, that Miami Heat team, one thing to remember, Dwayne Wade's on a bad knee at that point. He's 32, which should be young, but it's not. He
plays hard. These guys, when the guards got explosive, it's hard on the knees. Derrick Rose, yeah. John Wall. It's all through the history of explosive guard play.
So Wade is breaking down. Bosch is a great player, but not a guy who creates. And then you look at the rest of that roster. Shane Battier was like 35 and retired as soon as that series was over. Rashard Lewis was older. Udonis Haslem has just always been old. He was born old, and he was old then. All of their best supporting cast, the guys who had helped the big three win those back-to-back titles in Miami, that cast was eroding, so they needed LeBron all that much more. And if LeBron does not have those cramps, if the AC doesn't go out, I think there's a good chance the Heat win that game. Plus, now they've stolen home court advantage. Yeah, it could change the outcome of this series. I'm not saying it would have, but it's reasonable to think that it very well could have. This is the same Spurs team they'd beaten the year before, of course, on a miracle shot by Ray Allen. But, you know, and think about it. So that would have been a three-peat for the Heat. LeBron would have won his third straight. Is that enough to keep LeBron in Miami instead of going back to Cleveland that summer? I don't know. Kawhi Leonard doesn't win finals MVP if it goes the other way. Duncan and Pop have four titles instead of five. Yeah, who knows what the other reverberations could have been, but clearly the AC going out in game one of the 2014 finals had a major impact.
Damn, I didn't even think about how that could set off the timeline. So LeBron wins three in a row. Now it's like, all right, we're going to try for four in a row. Battier probably still retires, but then they reload with younger guys. So there's a world where he's trying for four in a row. He might not go back to, he would still go back to Cleveland. He would end up back in Cleveland instead of going to LA at all, I think.
I think, to be fair, I think LeBron had it in mind that he wanted this redemption play in Cleveland. And he was going to be a free agent that summer. And if you win three in a row, and again, the AC going out or not going out doesn't magically change Dwayne Wade's eroding arthritic knee, right? And if LeBron is looking around at his Miami supporting cast and going, well, you know what? It got old in a hurry. And my best tag team partner, Dwayne, is not who he was when I got here a few years ago. And I can go play with Kyrie and Kevin Love and do this redemption play in Cleveland, bring a championship to Ohio. That's still attractive, and maybe even more so if he thinks, well, I just got a three-peat in Miami. What more is there to do? You know, he probably, I think, probably leaves anyway. But you never know how the third championship might have changed things.
Does the third championship affect Space Jam 2?
There's a fun rip in the space-time continuum.
Come on.
I don't know. I mean, maybe by now we would have already been to Space Jam 3. You know,
LeBron wins three in a row in Miami. Everybody is off the Michael Jordan train. All of the common fans are like, he's the greatest. He stays in Miami. Now Space Jam 2 is a buddy cop movie with him and D Wade. Now it's straight up 48 hours with the Looney Tunes, and it's rated R, and it's nasty, and it's crazy.
I like that movie. I want to watch that movie.
Come on, man. They gotta go to space and solve a mystery.
I'm in.
That involves money laundering.
Can we get Nick Nolte in there too somehow?
You know Nick Nolte's available.
I'm in.
Okay. Shit, me too.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That miracle, I feel like the team that lost to the Heat the year before, I often wonder if that team is better than the team that beat the Heat the next year.
That's an interesting one. You know, the thing I remember most about the 2014 edition of the Spurs, you know, they get Boris Diaw in there and they've got this like almost entirely international cast. And they were all about ball movement, right? This is an older Duncan and an older Parker and an older Ginobili and a young Kawhi who we did not see coming and suddenly becomes finals MVP. But this was the ball movement, all for one, one for all. Everybody's happily sharing the ball, passing up good for great shots, all that stuff, great Spurs stuff, versus the ISO ball star heavy Miami Heat who can't create if LeBron doesn't have the ball in his hands or maybe Wade if his knees are feeling okay. And so this was around the time the NBA had first created all those fancy advanced stats we could look up on NBA.com and included passes per game and passes leading to an assist, passes to, you know, the hockey assists, all that stuff, secondary, all this. So we could track all this. And what I recall is that like night by night, we were seeing like, whoa, the Spurs are passing it like, you know, 50 times more than it was probably like four times more than the Heat. But the Spurs were all about this like beautiful ball movement, beautiful game that was keeping the Heat off balance and creating open shots for these less dominant individual offensive players for the Spurs. And the Heat could not manufacture enough just out of isolation. And so that became a major theme of that. I don't know if that makes the Spurs team in 14. I don't know if the 13 Spurs team was better than the 14 team. It probably was. But the emergence of Kawhi as a superstar on that stage, I think you could argue tips it in favor of the 2014 Spurs.
You know what? That's fair. And I just also, this feels like a good point to say, I've been down with the Spurs. The Spurs are, it's just, as the collective NBA Twitter, the faniverse, we're always like, who's the best? But they were clearly the best team for 20 straight years. Who had a better two decades?
Right. Yeah, no. If that's the thing. When you spread five titles over, I think it was a 15-year span.
Yeah.
And you've got one player and coach who are the through line of that whole time. I mean, I don't think it's probably inarguable at this point. I mean, if you want to say that, well, you know, the Lakers won three in a row, or the Lakers won. I mean, the Lakers did win five also. It's a slightly different time span we start measuring from, right? But you could have the Kobe and Phil Jackson Lakers, Shaq in one edition of them, Pau Gasol in the other edition.
Agreed.
They won five, so that the Lakers would certainly want to argue that point. I'm not sure if anybody else even could get into that discussion.
But and so the Lakers did, but then the Lakers had them drop off years. You know what I'm saying? The Spurs, when the Spurs lost, the Spurs were a playoff team for what?
Yeah.
Every one of those 15 years?
Oh, no. They never dropped out of the playoffs during that entire span. So from the moment that Duncan arrives, you know, all the way through that fifth championship and beyond, even at their worst.
A second round exit is their worst.
Yeah, or we're an eighth seed. You know, maybe we'll go out in the first round. I mean, I think they had one of those in there somewhere. But no, their ability to never bottom out was absolutely incredible. Now, so if you want to say that the off years for the Spurs, the non-championship years, were better than the Lakers' non-championship years, yeah, that's probably a good point.
Yeah, you know, shouts out to Smush Parker. You're welcome on the program whenever you have time.
You're making Laker fans shudder. You're making Laker fans absolutely just like they're smashing their podcasting devices right now.
They are. They're throwing Zunes in the river. And I just want to say, look, my bad. I was just making sure you were still listening. So the Spurs are amazing. Is the lockout title a real one for you? Or is it like, okay.
Yeah. No, of course. Like there's two lockout titles, right? There's the Spurs lockout title in 99, 50 games in 90-day regular season, crazy season. And, you know, they beat a Knicks team that nobody even expected to make the finals, right? That comes from, you know, the eighth seed. But every championship matters. Like, we just say the Spurs have five championships. We never talk about, well, they have four, and then there was that one back in 99. And it's the same thing, like, nobody ever talks about the fact that the 11-12 season was a lockout season, too. 66 games. And that's when the Heat beat the Thunder for their first championship. So we're not asterisking LeBron's first title. We're not asterisking Duncan's first title. I mean, Phil Jackson liked playing that game back in the day. He's the one who I think is almost solely responsible for bringing asterisk into the NBA lexicon. But nah, man, they all count. They all count.
I counted too. David Robinson from my town. Well, to say he's from my town is a stretch. He went to a neighboring high school for like 2 years.
That's enough to claim him. That's fine. Yeah. So this makes you just the second best basketball player from your town.
Absolutely. God, speaking of which, I played yesterday and I had a LeBron too hot moment. It's a pickup game outdoors in LA. It's like 10 a.m. So it's not 90 yet. But it's like 85. And I stepped out there and had some new Pumas on and played well. Hit a few shots. Hit a three. Net. Didn't even need to call back. A real one. I'm playing some defense, but at the end of the game, I could not move. I couldn't move. There was like a loose ball. It's like 9-9. We're going to 11. And the guy I'm checking, there's a loose ball that's about to go out and like, I just prayed it went out of bounds. They get the rebound and hit a two. And the game was over. And everybody was like, hey, you playing again? And I was like, actually, no. I don't know if I should have been playing that first one.
See, this is where I have to wonder about your hydration, your whole regimen on the court there? Did you have the proper pregame regimen, proper training? Were you looking after yourself enough? I'm worried about you, Jamel. Like, if you're wearing out by the end of a game to 11 in LA heat, there's no humidity out there, so you can't blame that. This is not LeBron cramping up in the AT&T Center. Like, you've got a lot more to work with there. Like, what went wrong?
I drank a bunch of LaCroix before the game. Apparently LaCroix, not real water.
What is it?
It's like water with fucking sea salt in it. You know what I mean? Bath shampoo or something. You know, like, it's a little bit of baby shampoo, some sea salt, pink Himalayan.
That explains why it tastes so great now. It's really the pink sea salt. I'm not sure all those bubbles are good for you while trying to play, you know, for an hour out in the heat.
That's fair. My final thought, the people that I worry most for in this AC off game, the concession stand employees. I was a concession stand employee at the MCI Center before it was the Verizon Center and then the Capital One Arena. And yes, I know how hot it gets when you have to make 45 chicken tender baskets. So I can't even imagine what they were going through. Hopefully people just stopped ordering food entirely. If you were a concession stand employee at the AT&T Center that night, hit me up. I will give you this shooting shirt off my back. We love you and we appreciate you. Howard, do you have anything to take us home with, sir?
Concession stand employees are the real heroes. You're right. And I'm sure, the guys who were like frying up the chicken and everything else, that's rough. But think about the guys who had to like hand out all the water. But, you know, because people were just descending on them, just like I'm surprised a water riot didn't break out, like some kind of like Mad Max scenario where it's the end of the world and everybody's just fighting over the last bottle of Dasani at the AT&T Center. And they're still saying, hold on, I got to take the cap off first, lest you use this as a projectile at some point during the game. No, just give me the damn bottle. Stop fiddling with the cap. I'm dying of thirst here. Now you got a riot breaking out. Some minimum wage employee at the stand is like, shit, like, come on, man. I'm down to my last case of Dasani. Could you guys just back up a little bit? It's we're lucky it didn't result in just an all-out riot and a literal as well as figurative meltdown.
And you know who would have loved it the most? Dasani. This might have been Dasani the whole time. We're pointing the finger at Pop and some crazy fan. Dasani Water Company. We're looking at you now.
It's the industrial military water bottle complex working behind the scenes. It was them all along.
We're hip to your little schemes.
Aquafina might have been involved in that somewhere too. I've always been suspicious of those guys.
Oh no, please. They're number two on my list.
We're on to you.
Well, damn. I guess we'll launch that investigation later. Howard, thanks for coming on the show again. You got anything you want to plug? Replug for me, please listen to The Crossover. I had such a good time on the show.
Absolutely. The Crossover Podcast, you can find it on the Sports Illustrated Podcast Network, along with all of our other great podcasts on the NBA, on baseball, football, all that stuff. So The Crossover Pod with myself and Chris Mannix every Tuesday and Friday. Appreciate the plug.
Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
Thanks for listening to NBA Storytime. I'm your host, co-writer, and stretch three on the floor, Jamel Johnson. Harry Swartout is our producer, co-writer, and a man heavily invested in RecSpecs. Daniel Hartigan is our script editor and the guy who mops up after people who fall down under the basket. Devin Shepard is our associate producer and the only one who makes sure we all get on the bus on time. Thank you, Devin. Haley O'Shaughnessy is our consulting producer and leading the league in bench points. John Yales and Peter Moses are our executive producers, and they also insisted on calling their own fouls. Real good to you guys. Got an idea for a story you want us to tell? Leave it in a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll put it in front of our podcast homeowners association to see if we're allowed to make it sometime in the future. And I'm not repainting my fence. NBA Storytime is a Blue Wire podcast. Catch you next time.